Hello, this is Howard Pendleton, commonly known to you out there as Mr. Science. Today we're going to deal with a miracle of gas refrigeration. And here to assist me is a lad from New Orleans, Sanford Berger. Sandy, that's great fish country down there, isn't it?
Well, it's full of deer and elk, too. You'll also find field mice, crows, hens, oxen, cats, owls, bugs.
I see. Well, the reason I mention fish, Sandy, is because I'm familiar with a fine seafood place down there, Billicourt's Flounder Palace. It's a must for any visitor.
Why, it's been off limits for 7 years, Mr. Science.
Sandy, let's talk a bit about refrigeration today.
Aye, Mr. Science.
Well, doesn't it seem paradoxical to you that a refrigerator is made cold by a flame?
Holy cat! What do I tell a gang at school that? I thought it was made cold by the ice cubes, Mr. Science.
No nonsense, Sandy. The principle involved here is the transfer of warm matter to cold matter. Now, did you ever notice what happens when you turn the refrigerator off?
Holy cat, yeah, the food gets spoiled, Mr. Science.
That's right, Sandy. And that's because the flame isn't supplying any cold. Am I making myself clear?
Well, I can't exactly say that all this is rubbing off on me too well, Mr. Science. So far, all I get out of it is if I jump into a flame, I'm liable to cool off.
Sandy, I'm going to open this refrigerator.
All right, I'll back up.
Now look in there and tell me what you see.
Oh, gee, it's all wet. Leaping lizards. And the food in there is good and squashed up. And the cheese floating down on the bottom.
Well, now, all this is certainly perplexing to me. I guess the Mr. Science custodian forgot to hook it up.
Yes, there's quite a stench there.
Sandy, at any rate, you can see what happened here. The flame went out, and the refrigerator warmed up because of it.
Say, Mr. Science...
Well, wait till I shut the refrigerator doors, man.
Yes. There's a good amount of unbearableness around here.
Now I'll get the gas flame going again and in no time at all.
Here's a match, Mr. Science. You better wear gloves when you light it. You'll freeze your fingers.
Well, there we are. Now the flame is lit in about a half hour. The refrigerator will be freezing again. Any questions, Sandy?
Oh, boy, Mr. Science. How come when my mother cooks a pot of soup on the stove, how come we don't get a load of ice instead of a pot of soup?
Oh, well, a stove is based on an entirely different principle, Sandy. In a stove, the flame heats the soup. You get what I mean?
Oh, yeah, gee, Mr. Science. From now on, I'm never going to throw an ice cube from a moving car. Boy, Smokey the Bear's got enough trouble as it is.
Good advice for all of us, Sandy. I'm glad I was given the opportunity to broaden your horizon here today, son. Well, this is Mr. Science, Howard Pendleton, saying knowledge is fruit for the mind. So try fruit consumption.
Once again, it's time for Matt Neffer, Boy Spot Welder.
Brought to you by stuff you put in a glass that fizzes up and gets all over your suit and everything.
Matt's trying days at the aircraft plant are over now. He's between jobs and sitting in his tastefully appointed apartment. He hears the doorbell ring and his friend Todd enters.
Todd, come in.
Yes, Matt. I hurried over when I discovered you were between jobs.
It's a nice way of putting it. Actually, here I am, the world's champion spot welder, and I'm out of work, Todd.
Well, that job at the aircraft plant is over now, Matt, but as champion welder, I'm sure you'll get another job very quickly.
Out here in the back entry, Todd.
Yes.
Boy, it's cold out here.
Yes, there's a nip in the air.
Hey, don't have any heat out here, Todd.
Well, it does taste the vegetables and apples.
That's what we use it for. And in the summer, it's always cool. In the winter, it's cold here. In the summer, it's always cool.
Do you come out here and sit in the vestibule in the summertime very often?
Oh, we don't call it that. We just call it the back entry, Todd.
Mm.
I do sit out here often in the summer months.
Well, man, I wonder just what's been going through your mind since your last day at the aircraft plant. Whether or not you've had time to think about the future, to plan on what you're going to do now, and, well, to get yourself busy.
I'm here, Todd, in the sewing room on the second floor.
Right.
Is
Second floor, did you say, Matt?
Right.
That would be two flights.
No, no. Just the second floor. No, come back down.
Oh, I've gone one too many.
Right. Now, stop right at this landing. That's it. Now in here. Straight down the hall.
Right or left?
Straight Matt. Down the hall. You can't miss me. I'm here by the window. See? Here I am.
I see you now, yes. You're looking out the window, Matt.
Yes. The reason I came up to this room, I get a wonderful view of my backyard and the yard next door. Donna, do you notice anything peculiar over there? Something that the police should be told about?
Well, let me look, Matt. I've seen that backyard a good many times. I've never noticed anything particularly unusual. No, I don't see anything there.
I don't either. So I guess I won't call the cops.
Leisure has overtaken Matt Neffer as he struggles to find something to keep him busy until the next spot welding job. He and his friend Todd talk long into the night. Next time, join us when we hear Matt say,
"Over here in the dumb waiter, Todd."
In the next episode of Matt Neffer, Boy Spot Welder.
Now it's time for Just Fancy Dan, the Barber of Hartsdale. As we look in on Just Fancy Dan, we see him by his barber chair, attired in purple corduroy trousers, a kind of beige suede shoes, and the real gone blue hat. He's talking to Pliny, who's in the chair.
Well, Pliny, you've had your troubles, all right.
I want to say we're almighty grateful for what you've done.
Well, Pliny, it's nothing that any barber wouldn't have done.
It's not that.
What are you grateful about? Everything?
We're all grateful. I want to tell you that the wife is grateful, too.
How's your wife feel about all I've done for your family, Pliny?
She's grateful.
Well, I'm sure.
Kids are almighty grateful,
too. Well, I'll bet the kids are quite appreciative of all
that. They want to appreciate. They appreciate everything you've done.
Okay, just turn a little bit this way. What's that to say about appreciating, Pliny?
I say we appreciate it.
Well, I don't
what you've done for us.
Don't
we're almighty grateful.
Thanks for nothing I did.
Well, something that should be said, and I'm glad to say it.
How's
grateful.
Your wife? Is she grateful
she's
the way
grateful.
You are?
She's grateful.
Well, I'm sure she should be, and all your kids, too.
The kids are grateful. We're almighty grateful to you, Dan.
Well, I didn't do much of nothing for you, Pliny. I just tried to help you out over that tough spot you were getting into there.
Just one thing I want to say to you, Dan.
Yeah, let me get the left side of the sideburns there.
One thing I want to say to you.
You want to say any one thing to me, Pliny?
Right. We're grateful.
Well, it's certainly nothing I wasn't happy to do, I'll tell you that. I like to stick my nose in people's business.
Wait a minute.
Kind of. Oh.
Did you nick me a little?
Oh, it seemed like I did, yeah.
Well,
it's kind of flowing there.
Well, I've had a full and happy life.
Oh, now, Pliny, don't go talking like that. Lie down on the floor. Oh,
all right, Dad. We're all grateful to you.
Oh, now, Pliny, you're going to pull through, all right.
We're all mighty grateful, Dad.
Just got so. Your wife grateful, too, Pliny?
Yeah, she's grateful.
And
the kids are all grateful.
The kids and your wife and you just can't thank me enough for all I've done for you.
Getting quite weak now, Dad.
Yeah, let me put this pillow under your feet. You always say get your feet up higher than your head in cases like this.
That's right, Dad.
I didn't mean to nick you that way, Pliny.
Well, accidents will happen, Dan.
Oh, of course.
We're all mighty grateful.
Oh, come
for what you've done.
Don't you talk that way.
Yeah, I've had a full, rich, and happy life.
Well, I'll
want
just...
want to say goodbye to you, Dan.
I'll cut her
out. Well, good, though. I want to say one thing.
Yeah, you want to say anything, Pliny?
Right.
What is it?
I'm grateful.
Something about you being grateful, your wife, kids, and everybody I spoke
to. Mighty grateful.
I'm glad you're grateful.
Yes, we're all mighty grateful. We've been listening to Just Fancy Dan, the Plain Barber of Hartsdale.
This is Public Lawyer, episodes dedicated to the selfless conduct of those who serve the best interests of the public. Court-appointed attorney Vernon Stitch is such a man.
Now, how do you plead, prisoner? Guilty or not guilty?
Well, I don't know.
Do you have benefit of counsel?
No. You see, Your Honor, I don't have a lawyer, to be honest with you.
Well, every man, woman, and child is entitled to the fullest protection of the law. Now, there are several court-appointed attorneys here in the courtroom. Would one of you please step forward to advise this man?
I will. I can't see too well from here, but I suspect that that eager voice belongs to Vernon Stitz.
Maybe I'd better go it alone and take my chances, Judge.
No, the law is a complex thing, Mr. Flowers. I'm calling a 10-minute recess here so that Mr. Stitz can familiarize himself with the details of your case.
I appreciate that, Your Honor.
Now, would the prisoner please step forward?
Prisoner just stepped forward, Your Honor.
Thank you, Counselor. Now, after having conferred with his attorney, how does the prisoner plead?
Just a minute, Your Honor. I've advised Mr. Flowers not to plead guilty or not guilty either.
Well, I hope you know what you're doing, Counselor.
Your Honor, I'm willing to take the risk. There's a precedent for all this. The State versus Cosmo, October 1928. If the good judge will look it up, you'll find that Victor Cosmo pleaded neither guilty nor not guilty in October of 1928.
Well, if it's a legal duel you want, my hot-headed young friend, you'll get one. I was the presiding judge on that case, and the reason Mr. Cosmo didn't plead one way or the other was because he was hit by a truck before the trial and became deceased.
Judge, I think I'll go it alone. I don't want the court to do me any favors with free attorneys, especially this one.
Well,
Your Honor, I'd like to ask for a recess.
On what grounds, may I know?
Some new evidence has come up that'll be of interest to this court.
Counselor, there hasn't as yet been a trial. I haven't seen any kind of evidence.
Exactly, Your Honor. We're dealing with the pre-introduction of evidence before a trial, a totally new legal concept.
Oh, get out of here, Stitz. That's ridiculous.
Ha! That's just what I've been waiting for. An outburst from you, Your Honor. I move that this case be thrown out of court because of pre-trial prejudice on the part of the presiding judge.
Frankly, Counselor, I am prejudiced. I think you're a boob.
Judge, I didn't come with this guy. All he said to me during the recess was that we were involved in a desperate gamble for time, even before he heard what I was doing here. I think he's a nut, so I'll plead guilty.
So be it.
It's time for King Yukon of the Northwest. King Yukon is a big, beautiful dog. And, of course, he belongs to the great sergeant of the Northwest Mounted Police, the late, great Sergeant Clarence E. McGillicuddy. As we look in on Sergeant McGillicuddy, our down king, King Yukon is right at his heels as they make their way into Dawson. And we hear...
Come on, dog. Got to ride into Dawson for supplies.
Sergeant, there.
Yes, dog?
I'm not the dog there. I am Pierre.
Oh, yes.
Pierre, the half-breed on Ed there.
Yes, Pierre.
Hey, what was you doing on top of that dog there? You was taking him on top of the town there with the big, What's the matter with that dog there?
Well, Pierre, nothing's the matter with the dog. We were just striking down a group of desperate criminals.
Oh. Oh, you mean some was, take the pelt from on top
They've
of the trap.
Stealing the pelt out of the traps, Pierre, and we're here to straighten out the whole thing.
Get that dog away on it there.
Down,
I'll pick him
boy.
On top of the chops there.
Down, boy. I see you don't like dogs, Pierre.
I don't like a dog that would growl on top of me there.
He never barks or growls unless he knows there's something that he shouldn't like about
I got half pound hamburger on top of the back pocket. That's what he
oh,
was growling.
Oh, that's probably the reason. Down, boy.
I will kick that dog there. You don't talk him off there.
Well, we've got to be getting...
Talk him off me there.
Come on, boy. Down.
Hey, Sergeant.
He is pretty mean.
Hey, Sergeant there.
Oh, he's going after me now. Wait just a minute. Down, boy.
Why you have a dog like that, Sergeant? It was making trouble all the time.
I don't know. They just assigned him to me.
I was get him loose there on top of the woods.
Down. Down, boy. Have you been having any trouble with your pelts, Pierre?
Yeah, they was not hold up these pans. I was having awful time on top of the cold weather.
You have been listening to King Yukon, the great dog, and his friend, Sergeant Clarence McGillicuddy, of the Northwest Mounted Police. All brought to you by someone. And now, Graham Crackers, with chocolate all over them, presents Matt Neffer, boy spot welder. As we look in on Matt today, we find him at the factory reporting for his new job. With him is his assistant, his good friend, Todd. Todd says...
Is this the place where you're going to work on the new invention, Matt?
This is it, Todd. Look, would you prepare my acetylene torch, please, for welding?
Yes, of course. Where will you be welding today, man? By that, I mean, will you be welding in this part of the invention, or...
Over here by the supply room.
Oh, yes. I was just asking you if you were going to be welding at that end of the invention or the other end.
The end nearest the door, way down there, Todd. I thought I'd get that done today.
But...
work my way back towards...
But isn't that the dangerous end?
Yes, I'm afraid it is, Todd, but... we might as well get the touchy things over with as quickly as possible.
Well, Matt, you have more nerves than I do. I wouldn't want to be working around anything atomic like this with an acetylene torch. Here, I've prepared the torch now, and all of your welding equipment is ready.
Over here by the time clock, Todd.
Oh, yes. I was just saying, I've prepared all of your welding equipment.
Oh, I just clocked in. All right, let's go back over there.
Matt, you won't mind if I stay at this end of the invention and you work down at the other end. It's not that I'm afraid, but...
I understand, Todd. People are usually afraid of things they don't understand. I think it's a case of, you know, just not knowing what's going on here and rather hesitant to work with me.
And
no, I appreciate your feelings. Go, stand in the safety zone. It's all right.
Right on, Matt.
Well, first, before you leave, would you put on my welding glasses, please, and hat?
Well, what do I want to put on your welding glasses and hat for? I'm going to be in the safety zone.
No, put them on me, Todd.
Oh, yes, Matt, of course.
All right, hurry now to the safety zone, Todd. I must get about this very dangerous welding.
Good luck, Matt.
Thank you, Todd.
Matt Neffer, Boy's Spot Welding King, is brought to you by Graham Crackers with chocolate all over them. Join us next time when you'll hear Matt say...
up here, Todd, stuck to the ceiling.
On Matt Neffer, Boy's Spot Welder.
Here is Natalie Attire to give the first of our college song readings in her song say manner. And this is the first one to be saluted in our series.
That's
it?
Right. I've gone through the mail, and we have selected this as the winner.
Well, first of all, tell me what the school is, if you will. I'm sure they're all...
The winner is Lowell Textile Institute. And
from Massachusetts, is it?
Yes, and they have forwarded this fight song that I will say now. And the reason we have selected them is that we like the letter best.
Well, that's what we will do each week for a college and a high school. We'll have Natalie say your song if we deem your letter to be the best culled from our mail.
You guys know Edison High?
What, Edison High? I don't believe... Do you know that, Natalie?
Well, I could get it.
Edison High in Miami?
They send us the words and the letter. The reason for saying it is the best. We'll do it.
Oh, well, you've got to send in.
Got to send it in, yeah, on your college or school stationery.
All right. Well, I think then I'll do that for Lowell Textile Institute. Would you like to look at the letter? Isn't that nice?
Yeah, let me read it. That's great.
Just a moment, Eddie.
Wait a minute, Eddie. Hey, Bob and Ray, we would like to hear our song because your program is our favorite and we think you are about the best on the radio, and how you can keep it up day after day is more than we can figure. We try, but sometimes we think we're funny too, but we can't...
Because sometimes when I'm at home, I try to be funny like you fellas, and it just doesn't seem to be as funny as when you're saying the same sort of a thing. And my wife, who has a good sense of humor also, thinks that when I talk sometimes like what you've been saying, it doesn't seem to be half as funny as the way you say it. And my wife has always said that she had a pretty good judge.
And so our first salute to a school is Lowell Textile Institute. Is that right?
That's right.
All right, Natalie, go ahead, go.
Root, toot, toot. Root, toot, toot. We are the boys from the Institute. We're not rough, we're not tough, but we are determined.
Thank you, Natalie Attired, and our congratulations to all of the winners up there, the members of Lowell Tech. I'm sure they'll be happy to hear their
song. I know they are.
And we'll be looking for your college song next week.
Eddie, he just can't hold one of those.
I'm sorry,
Matt. Anyway, you can't hold one of those drumsticks?
I just had a sandwich of mayonnaise on it.
Oh, I see. Well, that'll do it. A little dab will do it.
15, 14, 13.
And now, Crackers, covered all over with salt, presents Lawrence Fechtenberger, interstellar officer candidate.
10, 3, 1, 0.
In our last episode, Lawrence Fechtenberger, with his boisterous but serious compatriots at the Interstellar Space Academy, have been given the assignment of taking the experimental rocket IGS-2 to Osiris, the unknown planet. Now, as Fechtenberger makes his last-minute preparations, Mug Mellish comes up to him, and we hear...
Oh, Mellish.
Ah, Fechtenberger.
Are you making the trip to Osiris with us?
Well, I suppose I got to, Fechtenberger. The chief assigned me this trip.
How are your grades this semester?
Oh, what are you always talking about my grades for, Fechtenberger?
They're very important here at the Interstellar Officer Academy, I'll have you know, Mellish.
I'm sneering.
You always sneer. It's one thing that's wrong with you, Mellish, other than that you don't apply yourself in the classroom. If you want to be a good officer candidate, you must study. For someday, it will be your responsibility and your duty to go out into space and to defend this great planet.
Poo-poo, Fechtenberger.
Oh, poo-poo yourself, Lawrence. Or Mark Mellish.
Well, come on. We might as well not waste any time. I've checked over the decentralizing starboard stabilizer.
What's the oxygen situation at Osiris?
Well, it's the unknown planet. We don't know. But we got plenty of reserve oxygen in the tanks for us.
Well, as human beings, you know, we must have oxygen in order to live. If there's no oxygen on Osiris, there would be a good chance that we would not live.
I think I skipped class that day.
Well, you see now how that stuff comes back to roost. You have to attend every class and pay strict attention to your instructors.
Poo-poo, Fechtenberger.
All poo-poo to you, Mark Mellish. The motors are revving up now, Mellish. It's too late for you to change your mind. You're going to Osiris with us.
Crackers covered all over with soot has brought you another thrilling episode in the timely Space Age series, Lawrence Fechtenberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate.
Hello again, ladies. We're sitting in Aunt Penny's delightful sunlit kitchen, ready for another delightful true-to-life story from Aunt Penny herself, who's just made some gingerbread. Aunt Penny, that looks delicious.
Well, you can just bet it is. And hello, everyone. Doesn't that look good, Danny?
I'll bet this is made with creamy, digestible chicken fat, Aunt Penny.
You bet it is. All my cooking and baking, I always use chicken fat because I find it so digestible. It just sits in your stomach like a commemorative half-dollar piece.
Well, I'm going to have a sample of it, Aunt Penny, while you get to today's True to Life story.
But I don't eat too much, Danny. It'll kill your appetite.
I won't, Aunt Penny.
Now then, ladies.
Do you mind if I raise the shade just a little bit? There seems to be too much sunlight here in your sunlit kitchen.
Well, would you please?
Now then, the story I thought I'd tell you today is a story about...
How's that for you, Aunt Penny? No sunlight?
That's fine, Danny, although there's maybe a little too much coming in there. If you could just close the Venetian blinds just a tiny, tiny bit.
There, that's just about perfect.
Yes, that's fine. Story of Mr. and Mrs. Edward Bullock.
Well, what about Mr. and Mrs. Bullock, Aunt Penny? Where'd they live?
Mr. and Mrs. Bullock.
Wait just a minute. Let me go over and fix the shade there. It blew up.
Why don't you leave things alone, Danny?
Now, there it is, Aunt Penny. I'll just tack the corner of it here so it won't fly up again.
Well, Mr. and Mrs. Bullock lived in a small town...
Have you got a hammer, Danny?
What?
Have you a hammer so I can tack this?
Oh, well, Danny, I can't tell stories if you're going to be running around the room like this.
Well, I just want to get the room.
Breaking the window. You've torn the shade down. Nice head of it. Here's a hammer.
Thank you, Aunt Penny.
Now, no more, please.
Oh, my word, Daddy. What with all the carrying on, I'm afraid I don't have time for the story of Miss Bullock.
Oh, dear.
But you ladies remember now to do all your cooking with chicken fat. It's so digestible and so good that you'll have the fluffiest cakes and the nicest pie crust you ever thought possible.
I'm going to help myself to some more gingerbread, Aunt Penny, if you don't mind.
My word, you're a flannel mouth, Danny. Great Scott.
You're not going to leave our story there, are you?
Well, I have to. I have to leave. Between all the talk about chicken fat and you're breaking the window and tearing down the shade, I haven't had time to tell the story.
Well, I'm sorry, lady. Now, Matt Neffer, boy spot welding king of the world. Matt and his friend Todd
have of late been worried over strange telephone calls and letters which Matt has received from someone apparently out to get him. Now, in Matt's garage, he and Todd sit discussing.
Seems funny to me, Todd, that every day I either get a strange letter, unsigned, or a phone call, or it's interrupted. All the time threatening.
Could I have just a little bit more of that cocoa, Matt?
Well.
Yes, I know what you mean. It's certainly a perplexing situation. One that I'm sure only you will find the answer to.
Up here in the back porch.
Oh, yes. Hi, this back porch is holding up well, Matt. Must be 35 or 40 years old now.
Todd, here.
What?
Underneath the chair, another note. Let me read it. This is our final warning to you, Napper. Either you get out of town by Friday or suffer the consequences.
But Matt, who would be sending...
You know Beans, Napper. You'll be gone.
Well, who would send a thing like that, Matt?
What do you mean by if you knew Beans, you'd be gone?
Well, it could be one of two things, I suppose, Matt. If you knew Beans, meaning a person, or if you knew Beans, meaning baked beans, or lima beans, or string beans, pole beans.
Right here in the living room, Todd.
Oh, yeah. I didn't see you leave.
Wasn't there a Beans Redden who umpired in the National League for many years?
Yes, I think there was, Matt. How could that possibly have anything to do with this?
Well, it's a nickname, obviously. Just a second. Oh. Hello, Matt Neffer, voice Bodwelder.
Is you Neffer?
Yes?
If you know Beans, you get out of town.
Well, do you mean...
Do you know Beans?
Well... Hello? Hello?
What happened, Matt?
Hello? He hung up. It was a voice asking me if... I knew Bean.
Matt, this is becoming more and more perplexing every day. What are you going to do?
Up here in the attic, Todd.
And so the threats to Matt Neffer come at an even greater frequency than they have been. And who is Bean? Or what is Bean? Or what are Beans? Next time we'll hear Matt say from the basement,
"Look, Todd, my boiler hath runneth over."
In the next episode of Matt Neffer, Boy Spot Welder, a copyrighted radio feature. This episode may not be rebroadcast without the express consent of the president of the National Football League, whoever he is.
Hi, fans. This is Biff Burns again in the sports room, ready to talk to our guest, the legendary grand old man of football, in an off-season football interview with Coach Pop O'Brien of the Golden Cougars of Midwest University. Say hello to all your fans out there, Pop.
Well, hello, pigskin lovers out there.
Pop, I guess you're pretty much of a legend, aren't you?
Well, I guess you might say that I was born at a gridiron, Bill.
Where'd you get the nickname of Pop, Pop?
Well, most people credit Slipper Hanley with inventing my nickname, but the truth is, I gave Slipper Hanley his nickname.
That's all?
I was the first one to call him Slipper.
Slipper Hanley. I guess he's a bigger legend than even you are, Pop.
No, I think I'm a bigger legend.
Well, when your team, the Golden Cougars, are in the dressing room getting ready for the big game...
Well, they're all big, Biff.
Doesn't the team say, "Let's win this one for the old Slipper"?
Well, yes, they do, Biff, but it's not that dramatic.
Well, a picture of the team in the locker room at halftime, kids fighting back tears because they're losing the game, the brooding silence, and suddenly a voice with quiet resolve says, "Let's win this one for the old Slipper." It is moving, Pop.
Well, not if you know Slipper. He's a prominent industrialist, and he's in with the showbiz crowd. He's flashy, and he knows Frank Sinatra. And he's got a stable of four fighters, and he wears two rings on his pinky. Recently, I saw a picture of him in the window of a restaurant shaking hands with Gene Fulmer.
And I believe he recently acquired a piece of a Las Vegas casino, too.
That's right. He just bought into the Pink Bandit. I believe it's run by the syndicate.
I've heard that, Pop. What's the deal, do you know?
Well, just as soon as the papers were signed, giving Slipper 25% of the Pink Bandit, he had to turn over his full 25% interest to the syndicate. That's the only way they let him operate.
Well, if he'd turned over the full 25%, he doesn't own anything.
Well, the syndicate's pretty rough, Biff. Incidentally, about Slipper, recently he was given a solid gold cigarette case, a gift from a renowned continental beauty.
I didn't know that, Pop.
It's true. Now, Biff, knowing all this stuff about Slipper, I don't understand how any member of the team can say, let's win this one for the old Slipper.
Well, I see what you mean. It just doesn't sound right. It would sound right if Slipper were an old, shaky man being helped into the stadium, his memory fading a bit, not quite knowing which team is which. A man with shoulders bent by a million burdens and problems. But above all, a man who shouldn't be out on the stadium on such a cold day. In short, Pop, a man like you.
That's what I thought, yeah.
But the fact is, on the day of the game, your players still say, let's win this one for the old Slipper. How come they don't want to win it for you, Pop?
Well, there's no accounting for tastes. I guess you know that, Biff. Maybe my voice is too raspy. I think that's probably the reason. It gets on their nerves.
I don't think that's the reason. If it were, the players could very well say on the day of the big game...
Well, they're all big, Biff.
Let's win this one for raspy-voiced old Pop.
Well, that doesn't sound very good, Biff.
Well, the only other reason I can see for the players not giving you vocal homage in the locker room is the fact that the Golden Cougars haven't won a game since 1949.
That's right. You can't win them all, Biff.
Don't I know it, Pop? Legendary coach of the Golden Gophers of Midwest University. This is... Cougars, excuse me. This is Biff Burns saying until next time. This is Biff Burns saying so long from the sports room.
One of our best friends came in. And I assume, Barry, that you're here in town just for a stopover. Here, ladies and gentlemen, is star of stage, screen, radio, television, Mr. Barry Campbell.
Well, thank you very much, Bob, and hello again, everyone.
Barry, I want you to know how much we appreciate you dropping by, because we didn't have anything scheduled, and would you tell us just what you are doing in town?
Well, I made a daring departure in my career, although I'm still interested in acting, of course. I have, on the advice of my manager and agent, so far, we formed an all-girl orchestra. We feel that there's a great void there.
Well, you're stepping out into a new field now, having conquered the arts of movies and television and radio. You have this all-girl orchestra completely formed?
Pretty much so. We're still looking for the male singer.
Well, you're going to have a male... You won't be handling vocal chores yourself.
No, I carry a tune, as you probably know, gentlemen, but I don't think well enough to handle the singing chores.
Barry Campbell, ladies and gentlemen, having achieved success in so many fields now, gives us, for the first time on the air, the word that he is going into the orchestral field with an all-girl orchestra. How many will you have in the troupe?
There'll be 18 members.
18 members. And do you have any new sounds that you... you're going to introduce to music-loving America?
Well, except that we're going to emphasize violins and
string section.
Most of our arrangements, we hope, will be very lush.
I see. Have you got any bookings for your band as yet?
Yes, we're playing here in New York now. That is, we're opening tomorrow night.
Is that so? Wonderful.
At the skating rink at Central Park.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand you brought along a record, and we're going to hear a little touch of it. We don't have time for the whole thing.
No, we hope that this record will get us off the ground, so to speak. It's called Zip.
Barry Campbell and his all-girl orchestra with Zip. I'm sorry that we can't play a little bit more of that. That's a real strong sound.
Well, thanks very much, gentlemen. It's always a pleasure for me to come up here to your show. It's, I consider it a second home.
Well, thank you, Barry.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Ray. And
certainly a pleasure always to see you, and don't be a stranger, you hear?
All right.
And
thank
good
you,
luck in your opening.
I
so busy now.
Lush music and string sections and all that. I mean, that record doesn't sound anything like what he described.
It's quite different than I had expected. But you can always look to Barry Campbell for the new, the unusual, the different.
The nice.
The show-stopping.
Hello, ladies. It's time again for Aunt Penny's true-to-life stories. And here in Aunt Penny's sunlit kitchen, she's just baked off a batch of brownies.
And that's what they are, Danny.
Certainly look delicious, Aunt Betty.
You can help yourself to all you want, because they're so digestible. See, they're made with chicken fat.
What Aunt Penny says is true, ladies. Anything safe in chicken fat is safe in your stomach. Certainly delicious.
Fits in your stomach like a commemorative half-dollar piece.
Well, Aunt Penny, we're all wondering what the story is going to be about today, and I'm going to sit back in your old rocker here and just listen to you tell the story.
It's the story of Miss and Calvin Frawley.
Mr. and Mrs. Calvin Frawley, where do they live, Aunt Penny?
They made their home in a small southern town, not far from Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh, that's nice country down that way. And what did Mr. and Mrs. Frawley do for excitement in that small southern town?
Well, they decided one summer to take a motor trip to the north, see what it looked like up around Michigan and the Great Lake area. Well, they set out in their late model automobile, and Mrs. Frawley turned to Mrs. Frawley.
Miss Frawley, what time is it?
Well, it's almost 11 o'clock, Mr. Frawley.
Well, it won't be long now before we should be stopping for lunch.
Up ahead, doesn't somebody seem to be waving something there?
Yeah, looks like the front of the flag is down for some reason.
Better stop, then, don't you think?
Better pull the car over to the side of the road.
All right, mister.
Missus, will you open the window there?
Hey, we're tiring the road.
You what, sir?
We're tarring the road.
Sir?
You can't go up this road, because after we put the tar on, we got to put gravel and stuff that'll fly.
Hey, missus. Feller says they're tarring the road out here. Can't go any further.
Ask him what other road we can take.
What other road can we take, missus wants to know.
Well, I ain't a filling station, pal. I don't know what road. Where you going?
Well, we want to go up around the Great Lake, see some of the country.
Great Lake's about 1,100 miles. I imagine any road north would do it.
We must have taken a left where we should have taken a right, missus.
What?
I say, back about 1,100 miles, we must have taken a right.
Harrison, can we turn around and go back?
Can we turn around and go back?
No, there's five trucks in back of you, and there's one coming the other way. You're going to meet here in about 2 minutes.
Well, I suppose we got to just stay here, then.
Well, you can't stay here unless you want to be covered with tar.
Well, we don't want to be covered with tar, do we, missus?
No, can we drive off through that field?
Can we drive off right through that field, missus wants to know.
Sure you can.
Sir?
It's a bog.
Says it's a bog.
Ask him what a bog is.
What's a bog, Mrs. Watson?
Well, they kept talking to this gentleman there who was going to tie the rope.
But
I'm so afraid that we won't have time to finish that story.
Oh, goodness gracious, Aunt Penny. You always have to leave these stories up in the air when they're just at the exciting point.
Two tire trucks coming in opposite directions, soon to meet where Mr. and Mrs. Calvin Frawley were located.
Aunt Penny will continue her story of Mr. and Mrs. Calvin Frawley next time, and I'm going to have a couple more of these delicious chicken fat brownies.
Take some home to the little ones. Help yourself, because they are digestible, made with chicken fat.
Here now is a gentleman we'd like to introduce, whose work you may have seen in the bookstores, a writer of popular children's stories, Mr. August T. May.
Hello, Bob. It is a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you, Mr. May, and I wonder, just to refresh some of our memories, you could tell us a few of the books that you have written and which have had quite some success.
Well, maybe you remember the book I wrote for children. It was a children's book.
Yes.
The book's title was The Sky Fell Down.
I remember that one. My
it
kids
was a story
it.
For children. See, Bob, look. I'm wearing a blue suit.
I noticed that.
This is a new blue suit.
Very stylish with narrow lapels.
Do I look nice in a blue suit?
Yes, you do, Mr.
Oh,
May.
Oh, there is my dog Spot.
Now, Mr. May, I understand that as a writer of... will you take Spot out right at the moment?
Please, take the dog out. His name is Spot. Thank you for being kind to my dog.
He is
His
a funny
name
dog.
Is Spot. I love to run and play with Spot in my new blue suit.
Well, I'll tell you, Mr. May, what we really wanted to talk about was the job you did during the campaign, the recent campaigns, in the line of helping out a senator that you were working for.
A representative,
representative
I was working for.
Uh-huh.
And I was hired to go on children's programs.
Well, he can
on
see...
radio and on television.
Right.
Do you know the difference
between
radio and television?
I think we all do.
Yes, we know the answer.
Well, if we may move along, Mr. May, this representative conceived the idea of getting at the parents via the children and their programs. And so he hired you to write speeches and to go on the kids' shows. And I understand you're going to give us a sample of what you did.
Yes.
Are you? Here, then, is children's book author August T. May and his political speech.
Hello to all my young friends. It is August T. May. I'm happy to be here to talk to you again. I have talked to you many times in my books. Do you remember my children's books? One called The Little Weeping Willow Tree That Cried? I bet you do. Now, I'm going to talk to you on the radio. I would like to talk to you about a nice man. His name is Jack Spratt. He's a very nice man. This nice man would like to go to Washington, our nation's capital, to live for 4 whole years. Now, when he gets there, and when he lives there, he will make very nice laws for your mommy and daddy. He will make wonderful laws that will lower those big, bad taxes. give money to your mommy and daddy so that they can buy you toys and candy and ice cream. Run now out to the kitchen and tell mommy to be sure and vote for Jack Spratt. He's a very nice man.
I think we get the idea.
Oh, there is Gina Lola Bridgeter.
All right.
I must run and play with
Mr.
Gina.
Augustine, a very sneaky way. How did Mr. Spratt make out? Can you tell us at this time?
Both he and I were arrested.
I see.
It's on an appeal now.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome to the first radio cast in this area of Repulsive Pictures' 1934 box office bomb, Test Dive, which starred several British actors.
Well, Eddie,
what are you doing?
Oh, I thought I just got a cup of coffee. Deb's a little...
Hey, I was just looking over your physical. I don't know whether you're going to qualify for that dive.
Oh, don't tell me that, Harry.
No, well, it's not that you're not okay, it's that you've done so many of them. And...
Well, look, there's only one more to be done, and one tomorrow morning. And then I'm putting the down payment on that little white cottage with a fence around it.
Madeline was telling me about that.
She's a great gal, Harry.
I know she is.
It's only for her that I'm quitting the air game.
Have you thought about what you'll be doing after the dive tomorrow, Eddie?
No, just gonna take it easy. Grow carrots, beets, that little garden out back. Play with the kids.
I'm awful glad that you've saved your money the way you have. I know that you've always gotten so much enjoyment out of that garden and that home.
Yeah, will you hold this cup for me? After that one test dive tomorrow, it'll be the end of a terrific career, and then I'll be starting out on a real pleasant retirement.
The chief doesn't know whether you should do it or whether I should do it tomorrow.
Oh, I don't want you to do it, Harry. Look, this is just routine.
I know it's routine, but you're...
Well, I gotta go now. Just get the feel of the ship.
Want to go with you, Ed?
No, I'll be okay.
You want to do it alone, huh?
See you tomorrow, and thumbs up.
Right.
Control tower to Eddie. You're at about 17,000. Here are the instructions, Eddie. For you to write down, of course, all your reactions. Put her into a dive about 16. Pull her out about 8.
Right, Chief.
Everything okay up there, Eddie?
Everything's fine.
Good enough. Thumbs up.
I'm at 16 now, Chief.
Right.
Ready for the dive.
Okay. Hey, you know what?
What?
You're not too far from that little house with the garden out back.
Oh, I don't think I'm not thinking about it, Chief. Well, thumbs up anyway.
Right, Eddie.
Here I go. Pull it out now, Chief. I'm going to prove this ship has got what it takes.
Thumbs pull up. Out, Eddie. This is an order.
Thumbs up, Chief.
This is an order.
Where did he pull out of that dive?
What's he, crazy? Come on, pull him out.
Remember that little white house, Eddie.
Eddie, pull it out.
With a picket fence.
Pull it out, Eddie.
I'm not pulling it out, Chief.
We'll be back for the climax of Test Dive in just a few moments. First, this reminder that our next broadcast will feature the soundtrack of the 1935 movie, If Pain Persists. Now, back to Test Dive.
What a beautiful ship. She flies like a charm.
Oh, you wonderful, happy-go-lucky pioneer of the aircraft industry. Another episode of One Fella's Family, brought to you as a public service by the Be Kind to One Another Committee. today's episode entitled A Message Arrives, taken from Book IV, Chapter VI, pages IV through VI. As we look in on the family, we see Father inside the foyer.
I am standing just inside the foyer.
I know. What are you doing out there?
Well, I was looking for my rosebush trimmers.
Well, they wouldn't be in the foyer. Probably you left them out in the garage.
Well, I can't remember where I put them last fall when I finished trimming the roses. They should be around here somewhere. Not too early to trim the rose bushes.
Why don't you leave the rose bushes alone? Can't you think of anything else to do?
The only way we'll get full bloomers, Danny, is to trim them early and often.
I know, but you trimmed them practically down to the nub last fall.
Hey, wait. Someone's coming up the front walk. Looks like a messenger boy of some sort. He'll be ringing the bell any moment now.
Why don't you open?
Yes?
You do, old man, here.
I am Father Butcher.
Got a message for you.
All right. Do I have to sign for it?
Would you please hear right where I made the penciled X?
P-H-E-R. B-U-T-C-H-E-R.
Have you, forgotten anything?
You mean a tip?
That's what I mean, yeah. Tip.
No, I didn't forget it. It's a message, Fanny.
I wonder who it could be from.
Looks like it's in Jack's handwriting.
Well, open it up.
Yes.
I get so nervous when those special delivery letters arrive.
That's what it is. It's a message from Jack.
What does he say?
I haven't read it yet, Fanny. That's peculiar. Both sides of the paper are blank.
Sure you haven't forgotten anything? Anything, forgotten anything.
You mean a tip?
Tip, yeah.
No. Didn't forget it. Yes, it is from Jack.
You never do give tips, do you?
Listen to this, Fanny. Jack's in San Francisco.
Oh, isn't that wonderful news? Jack is in San Francisco.
Fanny, Fanny, Fanny.
And so concludes another episode of One Fella's Family, brought to you by the Be Kind to One Another Committee. Today's episode, entitled A Message Arrives, was taken from Book IV, Chapter VI, pages IV through VI. One Fella's Family is written and produced by T. Wilson Messy. Why don't you read your lines a little better, you old gaffer?
Well, our Barbary staff has been busy on fall features for the past week, and one of those which you have requested most is the Wedley Webster Book Review, which, of course, has been quite popular in the past. And, Webb, I am looking forward to a fall and winter of great books brought to life in vivid description by you on these weekly bills.
You put it real pretty, Bob. Well, as you know, the fall season, most of the publishers go to work. They get out a lot of books in the fall because people are back inside the house and they read.
Wedley suggests that people in the fall are ready to settle down and read a good book now.
Oh, Bob, you don't have to translate for me. Right, people know what I'm saying.
Well, maybe it's a little difficult for some.
That gets my load. I don't know if I've ever told you that or not.
Right, I won't
But every time I say something, you say, what Wedley means to say, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, all right,
they know what I'm saying.
Taking you all the time now. Let's get, what book have you got to review for this week?
The Fanny Fiver Cookbook.
Mm-hmm. This then would have to do with food, and what recipe do you like best about?
Well, there's so many wonderful recipes. I think on page 20, though, is the most interesting part of the whole book.
Uh-huh.
This ship is at sea for about 4 or 5 days. And as we look in on them...
Ship at sea for in the Fanny Farmer Cookbook?
That's right.
You sure you have the right book? You're reviewing the right one?
Look, you mind your business than all my mind.
But I see the Wedley Webster players over there. What are they?
They're here to dramatize what I think is the most interesting part of the book.
Sort of to dramatize a cookbook, huh?
Well,
I don't know
what I'm
going
to do.
All right.
Page 48, then. It's shortly after 4 bells, and the ship's at sea for about 8 days. And we look in and...
You sent for me, Captain?
That's right, matey. Take a look at this here chart.
Why?
You
got
the chart
upside down.
Why, you...
No.
You'll keep a civil tongue in your head when you talk to the good captain of this tub.
Begging your pardon, Captain, I just took a quick glance at the chart there.
I want you to take a good look at this chart, matey. Tell the captain where we are.
Well, if it were me, sir, I'd say we're about 200 miles south of Hatteras, sir.
What do you mean, if it be you? What kind of lingo is that to say to the good cap'n?
Will you ask me farewell?
Why, you... Get up off the deck, matey. Try to keep a civil tongue in your head. Now then...
Begging your pardon, sir.
What be we have to eat?
Well, we got some corned beef below, sir. A bit of blood pudding.
Yes.
And some pilot crackers.
Why, you... That's no bill of fare to recite to the cap'n, mate. Now get ye out of here.
Aye, aye, sir.
So, that's pretty exciting, isn't it?
That's exciting, yeah, but
that's a Fanny Farmer cookbook. Get it at any bookstore, I guess.
And hello again, ladies. Once again, we're sitting in Aunt Penny's true-to-life sunlit kitchen, all set for another of her famous stories. And Aunt Penny, is there any of that mince pie left?
Yes, there is, Danny. I noticed you liked it.
Oh, it sure was delicious.
Well, anything done in chicken fat, you know it's saturated with fat.
Yeah, that looks delicious.
Yes.
Anything that's cooked with chicken fat certainly is digestible. Doesn't sit in your stomach like a half-dollar piece.
What Aunt Penny says is true, ladies. You be sure and do all of your cooking, baking, deep-frying with chicken fat.
One thing about it, you can eat all you want, Danny. Here, help yourself to some of that
pie. I'm going to have a piece of this while you tell us today's true-to-life story, Aunt Penny.
Story of Miss and Mrs. Carlton Hobbs.
Yes?
And they had a small farm in New England. And they are farmers from way back. In other words, their father's fathers were farmers.
They came from farming stock.
Yes. And as we look in on them, this is a very interesting story, Danny, and I don't know as we'll be able to finish it all today with
well,
the limited time we have.
Let's begin it anyway, Aunt Penny.
All
I know
right.
The ladies are anxious to hear it.
It's an early Tuesday morning as Mr. and Mrs. Carlton Hobbs are sitting in the kitchen. Now, Mr. Hobbs, I might point out, has a very interesting hobby. He likes to tinker.
You mean he's a do-it-yourselfer, Aunt Penny?
That is right, and he helps all his neighbors. Well, as we look in on him now, we find that one of the neighbors is about to knock at the back door.
Well, Miss Hobbs, seems to me like it's been a long time since one of the neighbors has knocked at the back door and asked me to help him out doing something.
There's hardly anything left for you to fix, it seems
well,
like.
Well, that's right. I've fixed just about everything here in Centerville.
Yes, I know. But you're such a wonderful neighbor, Mr. Hobbs.
Well, I try to stick my nose in as many people's business as I can.
But you do a wonderful job, and I've heard everyone in town
I think somebody's
talking.
At the door now, Miss Hobbs.
Yes, I believe you're right. Yes. Well, I'll go open the door.
Oh, hello there.
Is the old man in?
Yes, he is.
Can I talk with him for a minute?
Well, yes.
Who is it, Miss Hobbs? Someone wants to see me? Want me to fix up something for him?
I don't know. Somebody wants to talk to you.
Well, bring him on in.
Well, I hate to come in here with my muddy shoes like this.
Ain't you Lawyer Clayton?
How do you do? Yes.
Yeah.
Look, Mr. Hobbs, I hate to come in on you this way,
but... It's all right. Any friend of mine's a friend of mine in Centerville.
Well, look, something went wrong.
Centerdale, whatever the town is.
Bill, it's Centerville.
Centerville.
Hey, look, something went bad down at my house there.
Well.
I hate to traipse around this way with these boots. I hope you'll excuse me.
You know what I'm here for.
Oh, that's all right. He can clean it up.
I'm supposed to help my neighbors.
No.
Well, that's fine. What's that?
I say what I'm here for is to help my neighbors.
I wonder, could you climb in my carryall with me and go back to the house?
Sure, be glad to.
Pipes have all let go. There's water all over the cellar.
Well, when I get my tool kit, I'll be right with you.
Fine.
Hold down the fort, Miss Hobbs.
Well.
He may be gone all night.
He was gone all night. Will you dry up, Hector?
Oh, yeah.
He was gone all night, and he was gone for an entire month.
Well, goodness gracious, Aunt. An entire month.
Call the police, and it was quite an interesting
he
story.
He bit off more than he could chew, Aunt.
He surely did, and I hope you can.
Speaking of that, I'm going to have another bite of this mince pie.
Well, we'll finish that story next time. Meanwhile, ladies, do all your cooking with chicken fat. It's digestible.
And now, Fink Bicycle Clips. Fink, P-H-I-N-Q-U-E. The bicycle clips made to keep your trousers from being caught in the bicycle chain as you pedal brings you another episode of Matt Neffer, Boys Spot Welder.
Today we join Matt Neffer and his friend Todd after a busy day at the foundry in Matt's expensively appointed apartment. We hear...
Over here, Matt, in the foyer.
Oh, just a minute. You call me Matt,
I'm sorry, Todd. I'm all confused. I don't know whether I'm coming or coming. And I'm so thoroughly mixed up.
You've had so much on your mind lately, Matt, that...
Coming or...
Going.
Going, Todd.
You've just been able to get to work on time and haven't been able to think about anything.
Over here, back at the duck press.
I know you've been worried about this whole thing, Matt, but you know that every crowd has a silver... Every...
Silver,
Behind every cloud, there's a silver...
Spoon.
Over here, by the bookcase.
Lining.
Right. Every cloud has a silver lining, Matt, and if you look on the bright side of things, I'm sure you'll discover that into each life a little...
In the kitchen, looks like rain, Todd.
A little rain must fall, yes.
Clouding up there, I noticed the south.
That drain, I suppose I should call the superintendent. Of course, I've been carrying on my...
Experiments,
my
Matt?
Experiments here in the kitchen, Todd, and probably has clogged up the drain somewhat.
Well, at least you've had the foresight to get the experiments out of the way before the big work at the foundry.
And I'm drained.
You know, of course, that a stitch in time saves...
Say, Todd, do you have Bertha's address?
Nine Sparrow Road. Nine! Stitch in time saves nine, Matt. I was trying to think of.
Todd, I don't know how to break this to you, but I think it's time that you be told.
You mean you're going to tell me what's been on your mind all these weeks?
If I can...
What's been preying on your conscience, perhaps, or keeping you from getting your mind on your...
I haven't had a night's sleep just thinking...
Wait a minute, getting your mind
on it.
Getting your mind on your... Work. Getting your mind on your work.
Work, but it's,
You have a memory as long as a,
Well, that certainly is in a state of upset. But over what? And will he be able to tell his friend Todd what it is? Be sure and join us next time when we'll hear Matt say,
"I'm sick."
In the next episode of Matt Neffer, Boy Spot Welding King of the World.
And now, chocolate cookies with white... They've canceled? Oh. As a sustaining feature, here now, another episode of Lawrence Spechtenberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate.
In our last episode, Lawrence and Mugg had just received their diplomas and were about to be given their first assignments. Now, in the dormitory, as we hear...
Well, what do you think, Mugg? Here we are, lieutenants now.
Yeah, I feel pretty proud of these bars, Spechtenberger.
Well, I guess I'm pleased that you finally earned them. I had some misgivings at first, but I've noticed you haven't sneered in at least 2 weeks now.
Funny, we were the only two to graduate, Spechtenberger.
Well, the others didn't apply themselves, and unfortunately, Jed Ordway, too, was washed out.
Well, shall we open up our sealed orders for our first assignment? It's kind of an auspicious occasion.
I wonder if you and I will draw the same assignment.
I wonder if we'll draw the same assignment, Spechtenberger, or whether we'll have different ones. We'll know in just a minute.
What the deuce? Look at here. I'm assigned to Bedford, Massachusetts.
And me to Walpole. How do you figure that?
I thought we'd be out in some planet.
Yeah.
Looks like a land job to me.
Yeah, we've been grounded, Spechtenberger. Maybe we better go see the dean. Maybe there's been some mistake.
Let's see if the commandant has any information.
Down these stairs, Spechtenberger. Through this door. Through this door, Spechtenberger.
Oh, okay.
Now this next flight of stairs.
Has the commandant moved his office?
No, it's just that our dormitory is so high, that's all.
I wonder if this is the door.
I think there's another. This is the right door, yeah. Well, wait, we went by it. Let's go back up through that door there.
Oh, yeah, it's this one here.
Just up this small flight of stairs.
And through this door here.
And I believe it's up to that landing there, isn't it, Fechtenberger?
I'm getting pooped.
Couldn't we have telephoned the commandant?
There's a door here.
Better wrap before we go in.
It's not his office. Just a huge auditorium. Clear across this auditorium, I think. Let's run across.
Right. Hey, come down, Fechtenberger. What are you going up there for?
I thought his office was up here.
No, it's over here. Come on back down. Now, should be behind this door that says Commandant.
Yes?
Is the Commandant in?
What would he be here for?
Well, it said Commandant on the door.
No, this is just where we stoked the fires. You're in the wrong. The Commandant's way across.
Across and up?
Across and up, in the other building.
Okay, thanks very much.
Sorry. Let's go.
Do you think we ought to stop for lunch, Fechtenberger?
I'm pooped, Mellish. Let's sit down.
And so Lawrence and Mugg are in a quandary as to what their first assignment means. One, to Bedford, Massachusetts, the other, at Walpole. Be sure and join us next time when we'll hear Lawrence Fechtenberger say...
You heard right, Mellish, and it's all your fault, too. We've been grounded.
In the next episode of Lawrence Fechtenberger, Interstellar Officer Candidate.
And now, another episode of One Fellow's Family, brought to you by the Be Kind to One Another Committee. Today's episode is entitled Great Excitement and is taken from book XXI, chapter IV, page 12 through 16. It's shortly after 9 a.m. now, and we find Father standing in the back entryway.
Beautiful day, Fanny.
Talking to.
Sky is blue overhead.
Mrs. is busy in the kitchen.
White, fleecy, cumulus clouds.
She will answer.
Float.
Hurrying off.
All right, announcer. So we're into the dramatic portion.
What were you saying? I couldn't hear you with the announcer.
Yes, Fanny is commenting on the weather.
Blue sky, my word, it's beautiful out.
Yes, it's a warm day for this time of year, too, even on the Pacific coast.
Yes, it certainly is.
Yes, not a sign of fog anywhere.
No.
In fact, the gulls are flying over the inlet.
What is?
The gulls are flying over the inlet.
That's unusual.
Almost warm enough for a picnic, Fanny.
Oh, this would be no time for a picnic. I think you're getting a little soft in your dotage.
Do you remember the letter we got from Jack last week?
Picnic. What?
I say, you remember the message from Jack saying he was returning to San Francisco?
I do vaguely remember something about that. I didn't remember too much about it.
Should have been able to get here from San Francisco at this time.
I'm becoming very odd myself.
Yeah, we should be hearing something from him soon.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a car coming up the drive now?
I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, must be my imagination. I could have sworn I heard a vehicle.
Well, I didn't hear anything. Let's not have an argument over it. Just because I don't hear a car come doesn't mean the car doesn't come.
Well, at any rate, we should be having some early morning excitement soon.
Yes. Real excitement.
You've been listening to another episode.
I don't know what the great excitement's going to be, Fanny.
Look, buddy.
But we'll discover soon.
Buddy?
Eh?
That part's all over.
Well,
now
you talk to our dramatic portion, we can talk to your announcement.
I don't know. I don't know how old you are.
You whippersnapper.
One of these days, they're going to knock you right through the control room window.
Yeah.
I've taken all the nonsense from you, fella, that I planned to.
Read the commercial.
For the free booklet, How to Be Kind, send your request to Be Kind to One Another Committee.
Kind indeed.
Care of Lefty Flanagan, Box 1135, Guam Island.
Well, box his ears.
Close $1,100 in stamps, please. Now, listen. If you interrupt me once more, not only you,
I'll go right to Betsy.
It's now to Dover Foxcroft, Maine, and radio's Wally Ballou, who has another industrial report. So come in, please, Wally Ballou.
Dover Foxcroft, Maine, where we're visiting at the Ace Bullfighter Cape Manufacturing Company, and we're speaking right now with the owner of this establishment.
How do you do? I'm Matthew Ted Weldon.
Ted, if we may call you that, how long have you operated this factory that makes capes for bullfighters?
Well, I started it on a shoestring, more or less. Right after I separated honorably, I might point out, from the service, with a GI Bill, I opened up a bullfight cape manufacturing plant.
Seems a little bit off the beaten track to be manufacturing these here in Dover Foxcroft, but I guess you ship them all to Mexico and that sort of place.
Mexico and Spain, they use a lot of them.
I understand you've just opened up a new outlet in Providence, Rhode Island.
That's right. Well, that's where we put the trimming on. Up here we make just the cape. Down there they put the fancy work on it. I have 60 men employed here, and I have just 12 ladies putting the fancy stuff on them down in Providence.
Well, how did you happen to decide that this was to be your life's work, what you wanted to go in for?
Well, I don't know. It just hit me one day what to do. I had a whole life ahead of me. And I started to write down a list of papers what I'd like to be. Doctor, lawyer, cape maker, shoemaker, automobile manufacturer, owner of several banks. And I checked over and talked it over with my family, and we decided I'd be a cape maker.
Well, you certainly have a bright array of them here. They're all sorts and types. Do you make the different sizes for different size bullfighters?
Yes, that's right. You take a 6'2" bullfighter.
Can you take one of these down and hold it up for the radio audience?
Certainly, there it is. Now, you'll notice this is made from extruded rayon. We put the wet, gooey rayon through a process. Here, you hold it. What are you doing there?
Well, you said to hold it, and I just came away in my hands there.
Well, that's a $65 job you just tore there. With fancy work, it'd be $85.
Certainly didn't mean to ruin a finished piece of merchandise like this.
This here, if you'd be careful now, Mr. Bellum. Over here, this one is made from just plain extruded sack cloth. And
that's probably for the fellow who's just starting out in bullfighting.
That's right, the fellow who doesn't want to spend too much money until he knows whether he can fool them their bulls. And there's no sense in going out there and having an expensive cape torn to ribbons by an angry bull. The fellow who'll buy the expensive ones is the fellow who knows his way around a bull ring.
I guess you're right there, and
Nick, I'm right there.
Nice talking to you, Ted, and all good luck in the future with your business.
Well, if you want to talk to the ladies down in Providence, you can take your equipment down there.
Thanks again.
Ray, did you notice that familiar figure outside there trying to get in?
Where have I seen him before?
You know who it is. It was Captain Parker Gibbs, the Fish for Thanksgiving man.
Oh, he must be out of work by now.
Come on in through the swinging door there,
right here,
Captain Gibbs. Captain Gibbs had an idea that he's going to try to get the public educated to serving fish for Thanksgiving.
How are you, Captain? Pretty good. You can skip all that now.
Well, I thought so.
He
was such a flop.
That was a true flop, as you say. I've forgotten that. I've been hired by another group. And
oh, you've left the fish industry, have you?
That's right. Of course, the fish hasn't left me entirely, has it?
No, when did that?
Well, of course,
Who are you connected with now?
I'm with the Pizza Institute of America, Bob.
I see.
And we're out now to try to educate the public, to bring them around to serving pizza for Christmas rather than the traditional turkey.
Well, Captain Gibbs,
Well, you know.
I know.
There are 17 varieties of pizza.
Yes.
All the way up from the plain, up to mushrooms and
anchovy.
Anchovy. You can put almost anything on.
Sausage.
What?
Sausage,
yes.
But look, these things you've been associated with have been...
People like pizza.
For Christmas, it isn't... It's like fish for Thanksgiving. It isn't a practical thing to...
Well, it can be served piping hot, and you can have as many pizzas as you want, depending on how many people you're entertaining at your festive table. And you can drink almost anything with pizza, water and milk and coffee or anything else.
Any of your other beverages. Well, I don't know. We're happy to...
But it is festive. It's holiday. You can color a pizza so that it has more festive meaning than a brown turkey.
Put it that way, Buster.
All right, but whoever ate a green pizza, I mean, couldn't want to do that either.
You could, of course. Yes. You could. There are many wonderful, harmless food dyes on the market now.
Well, it wouldn't be too appetizing, I don't think, Captain. I wish you could direct your energies to something a little more,
Well, all I'd like to say is just let the idea out, let the people think about it for a while, we'll see how it goes over.
Swell.
Think of pizza for Christmas, will you, friends?
Captain Parker Gibbs from Gloucester, Massachusetts, and now back inside.
Now, instead of a traffic report and stock market thing and all that, we bring another episode of One Fellow's Family. Today's episode, entitled Garage Double, or rather Garage Trouble, is taken from Book V, Chapter II, page 235. As we look in on the family now, we find that Mother...
Well, Fanny, I finally got the rose bushes trimmed.
Well...
Just in time, too. It looks like snow.
Hmm.
Yes.
Say, we didn't have one rose this summer, didn't we?
Well, that's what comes of trimming them too close, like I did last year.
Well, why don't you let them be? They're so small now, you prune them almost even with the earth.
I thought I might call up the rose hybridizer and find out just whether I'm doing it right or wrong, Fanny.
I forget what kind of roses those are out there.
Well, they're some kind of...
But didn't we have the Reza Stevens rose there one year?
Well, all I can remember is the Bob Perkins rose.
That was a beauty.
Yes. I wonder if we'll get any message from Jack today.
I don't know, but didn't we have a wonderful holiday, though?
Yes, it was a very
delightful.
The more
I think of it, and the weekend following was so exciting.
All of the children were here, Hanky and Panky.
Yes.
Pinky and Blinky.
And Blinky.
And Blinky, the twins.
Mm-hmm.
Nice to have the whole family together for Thanksgiving.
Well, it certainly will be quiet this week. You got a cold coming up?
Smoke of some kind, Fanny. You smoking, Fanny?
I haven't smoked for a long time.
Yeah. Well,
so this will be a quiet weekend compared to last.
It could be, Fanny, yes.
Yeah.
I'm going to put my rose trimmers away.
All right. Well, I'll
Where's the door to the cellar, Fanny?
It's right over there by the back entryway.
I think maybe I'll go out and check the garage for trouble.
I think... Where is all this smoke coming from?
It's coming from the garage, Fanny.
Somebody left the radio on with all that fool noise. I'll go turn off the radio.
Yes.
And you go see if there's any garage trouble.
You've been listening to One Fellow's Family. Brought to you instead of a traffic report and a stock market roundup. Stuff like that.
Studio full of spoon.
Today's episode entitled At the Seashore, or rather, Garage Trouble. Which was the episode?
Garage Trouble, announcer.
Garage Trouble, taken from one of the books that T. Wilson Messy has. I can't read my notes. It's too smoky in here. Messy production.